2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome back to another Baseball America Top 10 Prospects podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer. Today we are breaking down the Milwaukee Brewers farm system and their overall future outlook. And to do that, we are joined by the unparalleled Ben Badler. Ben, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, absolutely. Excited to talk some Brewers prospects. It's a fun system to write up. It's about as good as it's been in quite a while.
Yeah, you've done the Brewers system here at Baseball America for us for a few years now. And in that time, they have had some exciting young prospects. We saw a couple of them make their major league debut last year, Sal Frelick, Joey Weimer. There's been some talent in this system for a few years now. So it's interesting you say that this is the most talented group that they've had in some time. What are the strengths and weaknesses of this group? And ultimately, what makes you say that?
I mean, I think you really have to go back probably about 20 years to find a time when the Brewers farm system was as good as it is now. I mean, back then it was, you know, Prince Fielder and JJ Hardy and Ricky Weeks and Corey Hart turned out a lot of really good big league players. They didn't
Ryan Braun, MVP award winner.
Yeah. Yeah. He came like, I think like a little bit after that, but yeah, like that whole like era of Brewers prospects didn't end up ultimately parlaying that into a sustained run of success the way that the Brewers have done so in the last six, seven years. But I think they're just really well positioned now. It's a balanced system. You have a potential superstar at the top, Jackson Churio. There's, you know, maybe only a handful of teams in the game that have a prospect as talented as him. And you know, at sometimes in the, you know, in recent years, they had a lot of lower level prospects, but the upper level guys were lacking, or they were more heavy on position prospects, but the pitching is lacking. But now they kind of have a good balance of everything. They have players at the upper levels, obviously with Churio or Tyler Black, you know, on the hitting side, or Jefferson Kiro, who's in Double A this year. They have lower level players who are pretty exciting, and they have pitching too with Jacob Mizorowski, Robert Gasser, some other arms a little bit deeper down the system. I still think it's more of a hitter heavy system, but there's just a good balance and a blend of talent both at the upper levels, the lower levels, for hitters and for pitchers as well.
Yeah, and obviously having talent is a really, really good place to be. In terms of where the Brewers are organizationally, this was an offseason of a lot of change, most notably Craig Counsell, longtime manager. His contract expired. He went to the Chicago Cubs, division rival, for 5 years and $40 million. Obviously a huge loss organizationally. Pat Murphy, who was the Brewers bench coach, a longtime standout college coach at Arizona State. I covered him there, and I also covered him when he was the Padres interim, a manager a few years ago for my old paper. So he's obviously a decorated coach with a lot of accolades over the course of his career. He's now the Brewers' new manager. We saw David Stearns step down as the head of the organization 2 years ago, but he was still involved as an advisor. Now he's gone. Mm-hmm. He's running baseball operations for the Mets. So you have two really big organizational losses there, David Stearns and Craig Counsell no longer in the organization. What does that mean moving forward? Because I think we can all agree you can have talent, but how the organization develops it and ultimately how it's managed in the major leagues is what matters the most at the end of the day. What's the future outlook for the organization from that vantage point?
I think, yeah, a lot of the same people and processes are, you know, for the most part, amateur scouting, international scouting, pro scouting, a lot of the same department heads and people throughout the organization are still in place. And I think Matt Arnold, even in, you know, there's a reason I think David Stearns picked him as his number two when he joined the Brewers. He's been there for a while. His fingerprints have been all over this organization. I think you could just see even in his offseason last year that he helped put the Brewers in a better position in 2023. I think Craig Counsell is a very good manager, one of the best managers in the game. But I think a lot of good people and systems are are still in place. I think it's probably going to be more the players on the field this year that kind of determine what this kind of hazy looking 2024 outlook is for the Brewers, because obviously they were very good in 2023, but still some pretty big holes to fill on the field, more so than off the field, I think.
Yeah, you mentioned those holes on the field, and it's an important point. The Brewers have reached the playoffs 5 of the last 6 years. They're the defending NL Central Division champions. Obviously, they've had a lot of success, and that shouldn't be shortchanged in any way. However, they have won a playoff series only once during this time, and the biggest reason why is their offense perennially just isn't good enough, to be blunt about it. This is a team that, despite playing in a hitter-friendly ballpark, despite playing in one of the weakest divisions in baseball, perennially fields a bottom-half offense in Major League Baseball. We saw that last year. They were 17th in runs scored, and that gets exposed every year in the postseason. We saw last year, for example, during their wildcard series against the Diamondbacks, you know, Carlos Santana and Mark Canna were their 3-4 hitters, and both these are good players who've had good careers, but I think we can all agree those will not be the 3-4 hitters on a World Series caliber team. You know, if you're a World Series caliber team, you hope those are your 6-7 hitters, maybe your 5-6 hitters. And part of the issue, and we've talked about this every year, and it bears repeating, the Brewers have a tremendous track record of developing pitchers, but their track record of developing hitters is really, really poor. You know, you mentioned obviously that great run of Fielder and Hardy and Hart and Braun, but you go back, the Brewers really have not had a successful homegrown hitter developed since Scooter Gennett and Jonathan Lucroy. We saw Keston Hiura show some early promise. He kind of fell apart. You know, we saw Sal Frelick and Joey Weimer make their debuts last year. Things to work on, but also some flashes of promise there. We have to see how that kind of shakes out over time. Given they're a small market team, they have to develop their stars homegrown. It's going to be really, really hard for them to sign any big free agents. We saw them make a great trade for Christian Yelich a few years ago, but on the whole, this is a group that, to have success, they have to homegrow it, and they have not homegrown successful major league hitters really for well over a decade now. What's the outlook for this position player group specifically? Because I feel like you feel confident they're going to develop pitchers, but for this organization to get to the next level and start winning playoff series consistently and get to the franchise's first World Series since 1982, the hitter development has to improve.
Yeah, I'd feel more confident about the position prospects in the system right now, even more so than the pitchers. I mean, I like Jacob Mizorowski and Robert Gasser, and there's some other arms in the organization, but still I think the strength of this system is in the position prospects. You know, Jackson Churio, there's only a, you know, you can count on one hand the prospects in the game who are better than him. You know, him, whether it's Tyler Black, who I think is one of the better pure hitters, best strike zone discipline, some of the best strike zone discipline, not just in the system, but in all of the minor leagues, and a pretty good athlete too. Obviously the position up in the air with him might just depend on where the Brewers most or have an opening, which, you know, may end up being first base. But yeah, I mean, there's a whole bunch of hitters in the system. And then you mentioned, you know, Sal Frelick, who I still have a lot of confidence in. Joey Weimer, I think, is getting some holes further exposed as he's facing more advanced pitching, but certainly wouldn't write him off yet. Or Bryce Turang. I mean, they have a bunch of these guys in the organization who, you know, are getting pretty close. And then even the lower level guys like, you know, Luis Lara or some of the, you know, the high school players they took this year, or including, well, I'd say extended to college players too, with Brock Wilkin too. So there's some good arms in the system, but I do feel more strongly overall about the hitters. But obviously when you have Jackson Churio in the system, that helps tilt it in that favor too.
Yeah, so I think it's important that we dive into Jackson Churio. The Brewers, we talk about, this was an offseason in transition in some ways, and one of the moves they made to kind of stabilize their future was they signed Jackson Churio to a record extension, 8 years, $82 million, the largest deal ever for a player that has yet to play a day in Major League Baseball. And not only has he yet to play a day in Major League Baseball, he's barely played in AAA. He got called up there for the very end of the season last year. what is it about Jackson Churio that provides so much confidence that the organization was willing to give him $82 million when he has yet to play a day in the major leagues?
Yeah, I think you just look at the track record of players who have ranked as a top three, or if you want to extend it out this year, say top five prospect in baseball, specifically for position players who've been a top five overall prospect in baseball. You know, you do have some misses, right? Like you have your Jesus Monteros of the world, Ruben Rivera, other non-Yankees too, I suppose. But for the most part, the track record of those players is outstanding. Hall of Famers, perennial all-stars. And it's not because we're so smart or anything like that. It's just, look, the talent that these guys have is so obvious that if, you know, we didn't put them as a top three or a top five prospect in the game, people would be like, what are you doing? So you look back at that track record being so good, being what it is, and Churio absolutely fits in that group. So, you know, is there some risk that he ends up being a, you know, below average, you know, being that Ruben Rivera type player? Sure. I guess there's some risk that still happens. He's not a flawless player, but the upside is like he could be their, you know, version of Ronald Acuña. So it's the, for, like you said, the Brewers are not going to be going out signing, you know, Cody Bellinger or some other big ticket free agent at the top of the class, but they can afford to give out this contract. And if it doesn't work out for some reason, it's not going to hamstring the Brewers in a major way. And if it does, they're basically securing all of his 20s for what's going to be a significantly, I think, below market rate. Had this guy, you know, had he even waited another year and had a year like, you know, a Julio Rodriguez or a Corbin Carroll or a Gunnar Henderson too. So, yeah, it's just a really dynamic player, power, speed, performance, not first half performance, which was, you know, how much of that was a Southern League baseball that they were using in the first half, and then switching back to the traditional ball in the second half, and then how much of it was just a 19-year-old being pushed at a very aggressive level and making adjustments in the second half. You know, probably some of each. I do think the ball was a big factor, though. But I mean, power, speed, performance, at least when we're using a normal baseball, and ability to play a premium position in center field. Just a really, really electric, dynamic player who's somebody you can kind of build, be a cornerstone type player for an organization.
Yeah, you mentioned the Southern League ball. I mean, just to put it in perspective, once they switched back to the regular ball, his average jumped 90-ish points and his OPS jumped 200-ish points. So that was certainly a huge, huge adjustment, you know, for him and really players throughout the league, you know, moving back to the traditional ball. You mentioned there's still some things to work on, like any young player. Again, tremendously talented. You see the tools, you see the ability, you see the instincts, which stands out too. It's not like it's just a raw, tooled up dude. He's always shown good feel for the game and ability to adjust, which is so, so, so critical. What are some of the things he just needs to kind of work on as he gets ready to make his major league debut, which, again, given the contract he signed, we know will come in 2024. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, I think the key with him will be swing decisions. He's not a free swinger. He's not just up there, you know, chasing a whole bunch of sliders off the plate or swinging indiscriminately or just trying to pull everything. In fact, one of the things that's so impressive is the way that he hits the ball to the opposite field. He hits balls to right center field that just carry and carry and carry. It's plus raw power. It's true all fields power, which is really uncommon to see for a 19-year-old, especially a 19-year-old who has the, you know, speed and athleticism to be able to play center field. But he is an aggressive hitter. You know, we saw in the second half his strikeout rate went down, his walk rate went up a tick. Again, how much is that as the baseball switch? How much is that as the adjustments he's making on his own? Probably a blend of each. But, you know, I think if we were talking about a 19-year-old who was in low A, which would be more age appropriate or more age traditional level for him, we wouldn't even be talking about this as much. But I think the swing decisions are something that will need to be tightened up. Like, I don't think he's ever going to be like a, you know, 390, 400 on base guy necessarily, but that's probably the one area of his offensive game that he's that's going to have the most focus on it. And then defensively, he doesn't throw. It's not a great arm. That's probably like a fringy average arm. Kind of always knew that ever since he signed. He was like a shortstop with some, you know, some arm issues when he signed out of Venezuela. Brewers moved him pretty quickly to center field full time. But, you know, the arm is really the least important defensive tool for a center fielder. So not really more of a nitpick than anything else with him.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you've mentioned, he's a tremendously talented player. We've seen him make adjustments again to be 19 years old, have the season he had in Double A, make the adjustments he did second half baseball or not, and get to Triple A. It's a testament to his ability, his aptitude. And I think there's a high level of confidence that he's going to be a perennial all-star type of player. And that's what stood out, you know, in my conversations with evaluators outside the Brewers organization over the last few years is, even the people on the lower end of the spectrum with him say, oh yeah, he'll be a multiple time all-star. Like Starling Marte is like the low end comp, and the high end comps, you get names of people who have won MVP awards. So it has stood out to me that for a player who, you know, and this was even 2 years ago when he was still in low A in the Carolina League, his talent was so prodigious that evaluators had no problem saying, yeah, this is a perennial all-star potential MVP candidate, which, you know, not a lot of guys get that label put on them in low A, to say the least.
Yeah, it's pretty special talent. I mean, potential 30 home run potential, 30 plus stolen base potential, premium defense. The track record obviously speaks for itself too, I should say, and every tool, you know, with the exception of arm strength, should be a 60, if not a 70 tool. So pretty rare blend of hitting ability, athleticism, tools, and premium position, especially for a guy who's about to make his major league debut at 20 years old this upcoming season.
Absolutely. Well, Ben, this isn't just the Jackson Cheerio podcast. It's the Brewers entire farm system podcast. So you mentioned there's a lot of talent in the system. It's not just a case of having a great number one prospect and not a whole lot behind him. There are a lot of other really good players in the system. I want to break them down with you. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll get right back to it. Welcome back to the Brewers Top 10 Prospects podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer alongside Ben Badler. All right, Ben, so we talked about the Brewers organization as a whole. We talked about Jackson Cheerio. There are some really good prospects beyond just the number one prospect in the system. I want to check in with you on Jacob Mizorowski. He's someone that received a substantial bonus out of the 2022 draft. He was their second round pick, but received a higher bonus than first round pick Eric Brown Jr. And really, really, really turned some heads in his first full season, got to Double A, showing some absolutely explosive, huge stuff, had a star turn in the futures game. I wrote about him there and just blowing people away with easy triple digit velocity and a dirty slider. Just really, really impressive. He is 6'7". He's kind of a beanpole, and the walk rate is extremely high. And I know when I spoke to evaluators throughout the year, they said they love the stuff, but they felt he was a 100% reliever and there were some injury concerns. So there was a sense of just put him in your bullpen, let him blow gas as long as he can. You talk to some other people, there's a little more faith he can start, primarily because of belief in the Brewers' pitching development. What's the overall outlook for Jacob Mizorowski? I think there's a fairly unanimous consensus he will impact a major league team in a positive way. It's just a matter of whether it will be in the bullpen or in the rotation.
Yeah, I don't think any disagreement lies within, well, either the stuff or the control with him, right? It's kind of obvious. The fastball is sitting mid upper 90s. It's touching triple digits. It plays up above that. It's just this unusual release. He's, like you said, he's 6'7", gets a ton of extension, the life on the fastball. It's hard to square that up. Oh, and then he's snapping off just this hellacious slider. It's a plus-plus pitch. He's got a curveball, too, that he can spin just as well. Changeup is, you know, low 90s. It's hard for that to be a good pitch for him. I think that's the pitch that needs the most work, but he doesn't really even need it because his other stuff is so good. But, yeah, I mean, the control is kind of the obvious weakness for him right now, and that's going to dictate his future. The glass half empty look would be, yeah, the control, even while it did take a step forward last year, is still below average at best. And if it doesn't really make, or even if it does make improvements, might not be good enough to be a starting pitcher. The more optimistic view would be, hey, this guy has had, you know, one season in junior college. He's had one season of professional baseball in which he got to Double A as a 21-year-old. And he's 6'7", built like one of those, you know, waving inflatable things that you see outside a car dealership. Like, you know, those guys who are just so long and lanky, yeah, just take more time to grow into their body coordination and sync everything up. And like the ultimate of that is obviously Randy Johnson, which I'm not saying he's the next Randy Johnson, but yeah, like it might take 3 or 4 or 5 more years for everything to click for him. But there's a chance that just because he is so long and gangly that it might take more time for it to all sync up, but it might just take a little bit more patience. And when it does, he clearly has the stuff where if it all does click to be a front end starter. There's very few pitchers in minor league baseball right now who can match him just in terms of raw stuff. Yeah, maybe it ends up being a bullpen role, like some scouts think, and could just, you know, put him back there for an inning, wipe out stuff. But I still have, or I'm certainly more optimistic now than I was at this time a year ago, that he has a chance to be a starting pitcher. And if he does, the stuff is certainly there to be, a front end type of starter.
Yeah, and I think what's important to note too is, you know, he still has time. You mentioned the long, lean, gangly guys can take a little bit longer to fill out, gain some body control, gain some coordination. And he finished last year at Double A. It was only 5 starts there. So, I mean, he could very realistically go back to Double A this year, spend some time there, spend the rest of the year in Triple A in Nashville, which is a solid park for pitchers in terms of the Triple A, you know, just the baseball and everything that goes on there. You know, we could see him spend a full another year in the minors if he needs it, and he certainly wouldn't be off track. And I think, too, what's encouraging when you talk about the organization he's in, we see some organizations rush their pitching prospects. If he was in the Royals system, I think you'd feel a lot worse about his future outlook than other organizations as well that tend to do that. You know, with the Brewers, they have shown a willingness. They did this with Brandon Woodruff. They did it with Corbin Burns. Bring him up to the majors in the bullpen at first, let him get acclimated, let him work through some things, and then eventually transition them to the rotation. So I think what's important here when you ultimately look at, okay, realistically, what will his big league outcome be? I think you can be optimistic that he's in an organization that will give him the time and the path to develop as a starter. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I do feel like given, again, you could see him spending all of next year in the minors and then coming up in a bullpen role and then transitioning to a starter, you know, that is a possible outcome that would be beneficial. And I feel pretty good about the Brewers with their track record doing that if needed.
Yeah, I could see that happening. I could see them just leaving him in that role too, and being that Josh Hader type relief weapon for them. There's just a huge band of outcomes for him that range from everything from a, you know, front of the rotation starter to that really high end reliever to, you know, potentially somebody who never figures out the control. So there's a big wide range of variants for what could happen with him, but the high end outcomes are very, very high.
Yeah, I do want to ask you, and I alluded to this earlier. Again, you can never predict injuries. Everyone's body is so different, but you know, I did speak to a few evaluators who said, just looking at his body, the delivery, his stuff, the way it all works, they had some injury concerns long-term with him. Did any of that come up in your reporting?
It's, I mean, anytime you have a guy who throws 102 miles an hour, there's going to be some added injury risk over, you know, the guys who are, you know, topping it, you know, 94, 95. Yeah. It's, there's definitely effort to the delivery. And I think that also just impedes his control too, whether that adds extra injury risk. Maybe I think the biggest thing is just being able to repeat that delivery to throw enough strikes. And then of course, obviously we do need to see him just be able to prove that he can handle, you know, a starter's full season workload, which we haven't really seen yet, but also it was his first year in Pro Bowl. And like, you know, he is 6'7", 190 pounds. Like the Brewers were trying to be pretty careful in how they managed his innings his first year out.
Yeah, very understandably. I think no one would be surprised if in a few years he's 6'7", 225, 230. I think that would probably be the optimal weight there. Ben, we mentioned, you know, Jackson Chourio, clear-cut number one in the system, one of the top three prospects in baseball, you know, has a case. There will be people who say he's number one. Obviously, Jackson Holliday for us is number one, but Jackson Chourio is in that talent band, so to speak. Mizorowski checking in at number two. How much debate was there between him and some of the other guys on this list? Jefferson Caro reached the Futures game last year, consistently regarded as one of the best catching prospects in baseball. You know, Tyler Black can really, really, really hit. Good reviews all around. Robert Gasser led all AAA in strikeouts. You know, we see lefties who maybe don't let up the radar gun. That's a phylum that consistently performs well in the majors. You know, it just when they can get outs in AAA, it tends to work in the majors for them. And sometimes they exceed what prospect expectations are. How much debate was there kind of in this 2-5 group? And you know, what were kind of the tiers, so to speak?
Yeah, I think the upside that Mizorowski had gave him the edge for me. If you're somebody who's more pessimistic about Mizorowski's chances to start or some of the other holes in his game, he'd probably be lower. And Jefferson Chourio, he's right up there among, I mean, he's not at that Ethan Salas tier. And then Samuel Basayo, I would have ahead of him too. Although Basayo, you know, I don't know if he's going to catch long-term, whereas Jefferson Chourio, he's right in that next group for me. And it's just as far as pure defense, I don't know. He's at least in the conversation for the best defensive catcher in the minor leagues. And if it was just an all defense guy, we wouldn't be, I certainly wouldn't be talking about him in this tier. I mean, he got to double A as a 20-year-old this year and really hit. He showed more power too. And then every box you want a 20-year-old catcher to check defensively, he does. It's plus arm, plays up. He's got a quick release, blocks well, receives well, all the intangibles that managers love to have in a catcher. He's going to be like, you know, Pat Murphy's best friend in a couple years. He does so many different things in terms of the way he calls a game and controls a pitching staff and the leadership that he has. So, but this, the thing is offensively, his game really took a step forward this year. We saw, you know, more power where it looked like more of a, you know, he could make some hard contact before, but more of like a slashy type hitter. Now looks more like a 20 plus home run guy. So, good fastball hitter. He's kind of like Chourio where he's going to have to tighten up some of the swing decisions. So I don't know if he's going to be a, you know, top middle of the order type hitter. May end up hitting still toward the back of the lineup, but even so, I think he'll be an above average offensive, or has a chance to be an above average offensive player for a catcher and a well above average defensive player too. So to me, that's like a pretty easy top 50 prospect with Mizorowski too.
Yeah, again, Jefferson Caro is someone who really drew plaudits even in the ACL. And we talk about Jackson Churio. You know, the Brewers have done a really good job internationally. You look at Churio, you look at Caro, Luis Lahr, who ranks in this top 10. It does seem like that has been a strength of this organization, finding talent on the international market.
Yeah, they've gotten pretty good returns. certainly when you have a guy who's making a case for being the number one prospect in baseball 2 years after signing, and then Carroll being, like I said, probably a top 50 prospect, and Luis Lahr at least on that periphery of being in that top 100 conversation right now too.
Yeah, absolutely. Ben, we've talked so much about this organization, their success developing pitchers, and there's two pitchers in this top 10 who, again, they're not going to light up a radar gun. The stuff isn't going to wow anyone, but they've been successful, and there's enough there where evaluators do see big leaguers. We talked about Robert Gasser, led all of AAA in strikeouts last year, and Carlos Rodriguez, a right-handed pitcher, was a mid-round pick a few years ago, and was frankly one of the most effective pitchers in minor league baseball last year. Really kind of came out of nowhere a little bit. Guy's from Florida Southwestern State Junior College, born in Nicaragua, led the Southern League with a 2.77 ERA. Consistently was up near the top of the leaderboard in most minor league categories. What's the realistic outlook here for Gasser and Rodriguez? Because I feel like these are guys that, from the outside looking, you say, okay, maybe number five-ish starters, but with the Brewers, you know, we've seen a lot of guys who might have that expectation and exceed that.
Yeah, Carlos Rodriguez, the Brewers have shown a knack for hitting on junior college pitchers, yeah. And I don't know if he's going to be next in line as far as some of the previous guys who've come through the organization, but you look at him and physically nothing really jumps out. It's this compact, kind of squatty-ish 6-foot right-handed pitcher. The velocity, like you said, it's sitting low 90s. Might like tickle a 95 every now and then. It's mostly that the changeup is a really good pitch for him. It's a lot of arm side, run on that pitch. That's really where he gets most of his swing and miss. He doesn't really have, splits against or a difference in his splits between lefties and righties for the most part. And a big part of that is because of that changeup that he can use. Breaking stuff is like, it's all right. It's okay. But there's nothing, wow about it. Certainly a lot of questions when he was in the lower levels of the minor leagues of, all right, well, yeah, he's getting guys out now, but we see fastball changeup, especially guys with a really good changeup in the lower levels can, breeze through that level of hitter. And then when they get to the upper levels, the success starts to fade away. But no, like you said, he got to the upper levels and he was one of the best performers in the minor leagues. I think there's still questions about how well that's going to fare now against major league hitters. But yeah, just putting together the list, I was like, man, Josh Noth, who was a big draft pick for the Brewers this year out of high school. He clearly has better raw stuff than Rodriguez. And there's some other guys who probably could have made the back of this top 10 who, maybe have more tools on the position player side or just more upside than him. But I was like, I don't know if I can keep this guy out of the top 10, just the way he performed. So he just keeps kind of proving everybody wrong. And, maybe he is one of these guys. I think obviously Robert Gasser will probably be in line first for a major league role, especially in the starting rotation. But I do expect Rodriguez to make his debut at some point in 2024.
To put you in the spot, how realistic is it that we look up 3 years from now and Robert Gasser is the Brewers number four starter and Carlos Rodriguez is their number five?
3 years from now. Yeah. Hard to put think of their future rotation that far out, but in terms of fitting into that role. Yeah. I certainly think both of them have the ability to do that. And I think Robert Gasser probably has more upside to pitch in a role higher than that. Like you said, sometimes these guys, especially left-handed pitchers who maybe don't light up a radar gun, but do have success. And certainly like the first half of Robert Gasser's or the early months of Robert Gasser's 2023 season weren't super inspiring, but toward the end of it, or after those first couple months, it was a lot better. So, I could see him developing into, number four type starter. I could also see him being one of those guys who ends up exceeding expectations and being a number three, or, I wouldn't even rule out something higher than that.
Yeah. I mean, I think about, Eric, I just keep going back to Eric Lauer, who I saw throughout the minors, covered him with the Padres. And I mean, he just was very much a number five-ish starter. Then he gets to Milwaukee and he had two seasons of, really, really good performance that was more in line with, that first year, especially in 2021, he pitched like a number three. Then 2022 was really, really good. Last year, 2023 was not great, got hurt. But even just getting 2 years of Eric Lauer, ERAs in the low to mid threes is way beyond what I thought anything possible, and as well as a lot of other teams and evaluators. So we'll see if the Brewers can get that out of Gasser as well. Ben, you mentioned there were a lot of players who had tools or had some exciting things about their games that, pushed them into top 10 consideration for you. And you mentioned there's some depth to the system as well. How many players would you say were in consideration for this 10, or how many guys were maybe on the cusp and just missed?
Yeah, I think you go to the top 15 in this system and make a pretty compelling case for any of those guys to be in, in that back end of the top 10. I like their draft this year. They tend to be more of a college heavy organization, but that wasn't really the route they went this year. So they got a lot of pretty intriguing high school players with, Cooper Pratt, shortstop, Eric Patanti, shortstop, more likely third. I think he's going to third base and Pro Bowl full time. And, hopefully he can stick there. I think he can. Huge power upside with him. Obviously, Josh Noth, a right-handed pitcher out of New York high school, super young for the draft class. So is Patanti as well. And then on the college side, they drafted, Mike Bovee with their second round pick out of Nebraska, Omaha. They had Yoferi Rodriguez in the DSL this year. Luke Adams is a really polarizing player, but also I think a really good pick for a 12th round pick out of an Illinois high school in 2022, who had a really nice year for himself in low A this season. So, I think after that, like their depth in the, the 20 to 30 range is kind of, it's ordinary. It's not like, wow, there's so many more players after 30 who I wish I could still write up. Like, no, it's about what you would expect in a normal system. But I think especially from 1 through 15, the depth is better than what you would find in most organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. So, just as we wrap up here, I feel like, again, we've got a team that is consistently winning the major leagues, again, defending NL Central champions, reached the playoffs 5 of the last 6 years, a really, really good farm system with a premium talent at the top. Again, the point of all this is to put together a team in the major leagues capable of competing for and ultimately winning a World Series. Again, a lot of change, Pat Murphy taking over, David Stearns leaving the organization. You even talk about, Brandon Woodruff, a longtime stalwart for the team, was non-tendered for the upcoming year because he had shoulder surgery and will miss the season. So, there's obviously a lot of talk. Corbin Burns only has one more year left on his deal. So there is some transitional aspects to where this team is. Where do you see this organization going? What realistically should be the expectations moving forward over the next few years? Do you see it kind of maintaining status quo, a dip, then an uptick? And just, again, I get the main question is this team going to be a World Series contender, and what needs to happen for them to get there?
Yeah. I mean, I'll know a lot more in like 4 months once they've kind of gone through this whole offseason. They're a very good team in 2023, but losing Woodruff is pretty brutal. How do they navigate this kind of in between year where like how competitive will they be in 2024? How much do they want to push more chips in for next season as opposed to trading some players and maybe looking toward 2025? I don't know. I'm sure those are very stressful decisions for the Brewers front office, but the talent is there in the organization. I mean, we didn't even, Sal Frelick is not even counted in the, in our farm system rankings or in the Brewers top 10 prospects, but somebody like him, or I think there's still more growth ahead for Bryce Harang. And then, they're going to get Churio is going to come up this year. Tyler Black's going to be ready to come up this year. Gasser will come up at some point this year. Maybe Jacob Mizurowski. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of guys who are going to be ready to contribute in 2024. Most of them, I'm sure, will struggle just because they're going to be young rookies. Including Churio, wouldn't surprise me if he struggled this year as a 20-year-old. But I think going forward from like 2025 on, the talent is still there in the organization, in the minor league pipeline to continue another run. I mean, it's kind of hard to get to the playoffs for another, 5 years out of six going forward, but if they continue to kind of make the right moves in trades and some smart free agent signings on the margins, those kind of things, the talent is there in the organization to build around. But 2024, it's going to be a tricky offseason to navigate.
Well, we'll see what they do and which of these young players can come up and, hopefully make an impact sooner rather than later. Ben, thank you so much for joining me today. It was a pleasure having you as always, and we always appreciate your insight and analysis.
Yeah, absolutely. Always fun talking prospects with you, Kyle.
All right, everyone. That'll do it for another Baseball America Top 10 Prospects podcast. Go ahead and give us a review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever platform you're listening on. We'd love to hear from you. For Ben Badler, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening. Have a good one.